You are listening to
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
What's going on, Worldwide Engineering? Welcome to this episode. I'm definitely glad that you are here today because today's episode is just packed with value. I had the chance to speak with Sas Perez, who is by far the most knowledgeable person in the solar energy sector. He is the definition of what you call an expert, and his experience says it. In 1988, Sas founded Quebec's first solar panel manufacturing company in the entire province. That was back in 1988 when solar energy wasn't even cool, it wasn't even a thing, and it was still getting started. Sas and I really got to dive deep into the future of the renewable energy sector, as well as how the industry is currently being affected by the coronavirus pandemic we are living through. Sas got to share some of his experience going, building the company, as well as getting approached by GM Motors for a solar energy initiative. If you're an entrepreneur looking to build a company one day, or if you're someone really passionate about renewable energies, trust me, you are going to be getting a lot of value from this episode. Also, Sas and his company he founded, iSun Energy, are currently looking to hire people. The job isn't limited to people in Canada because you can work anywhere in the world. Sas is going during the podcast to be giving more information about the job description, what it entails. He also asked me to tell you that you can apply for the job on their LinkedIn account directly, which is iSun Energy, or to check out their website, isunenergy.com, for any announcements. Also, wanted to point out that Sas and I both recorded our voice from different microphones because we were sitting a few meters apart, which is why you might notice a slight change in volume or in gain between our two voices, but I don't think it will be affecting your listener experience. With that said, guys, I hope you enjoy the podcast. Please, please, please feel free to send me any requests or what you thought about the podcast or any feedback on Instagram, Worldwide Engineering, or on my personal Instagram at Leon Aboud. With that said, guys, enjoy the podcast. I'll be seeing you very, very soon. To launch things off, actually, I was before this whole interview, I dug on the internet for some interesting stats about trying to find something related to solar energy and the current pandemic we're living through.
Yes.
And I found something actually pretty interesting, and it was actually a stat from Bloomberg New Energy Finance. Mm-hmm. And they've projected that the maximum installation for solar panels in 2020 will be 43 gigawatts. Mm-hmm. Compared that to 45 gigawatts in 2019.
Yeah.
So that's about a 2% drop in installation of solar panels.
In 2020.
In 2020, between 2019 and 2020. So when you think about that in the terms of like solar energy is a growing technology, and you wouldn't expect that under normal circumstances. You wouldn't expect a negative growth for the year. Mm-hmm. So as someone who works in the industry, I'd like to know, what is your experience? How has the industry been disrupted by the virus, from the supply chain to the customers to the suppliers? I'd like to know what you think.
You have to start from the realization that 50% of the world's solar panels are made in China. So the minute China's disrupted, the rest of the world is disrupted in this category. And as a result, supply chain's disrupted, projects are disrupted. Plus, you've had a negative vibe coming out of Washington, D.C. for 3 years against renewables, pro-fossil fuels. They've reduced the investment tax credit. They've reduced incentives. So they've made it a very challenging environment in the U.S. But despite that, in the U.S., it's growing. With COVID now, it was growing. Sorry. With COVID now, everything is flattened. Everything is dropping. I anticipate it's going to start coming back in Q3 of 2020 and be back in growth mode by Q4 2020. So, yes, it's been a hiccup. What I'm hoping is that as people realize that pollution has a negative effect not only on our planet, but on our health, and that COVID attacked those who were less healthy much more than those who were healthy, and that COVID can actually travel on the particulate matter that is pollution. When people start to put all these things together, I think we're headed towards a healthier attitude and including that of energy.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if the manufacturing plants for solar are back in China or not? You're not sure yet?
Not fully, because demand is also not back. Mm-hmm. So there is an internal demand within China that is growing. They're closing down coal plants, they're stopping projects of coal plants, and they're moving more towards renewables. And they have a huge internal demand. But for sure, it has disrupted things.
That demand was definitely partly fueled by the fact that air pollution in China was terrible. It was destructive.
If you've been to China, you've walked with a mask in Shanghai or Beijing. You've lived that as an everyday reality. Mm-hmm. Masks are foreign to us in the West, but they're normal to Asians. When they're sick, they wear a mask out of courtesy. When it's in polluted cities, they wore masks and wear masks. Now everything is actually cleaner than it was before because there's been less pollution. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a new normal in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One thing that fascinates me about you is that you've been in the solar industry since the very beginning. 1988, correct? You started your first company,
yeah.
The first solar panel manufacturer in Quebec, correct?
Correct.
How was it back then? Did the government know about solar energy as a whole back in 1999? And what was the efficiency of panels back then?
So in 1988, I like to say it was me, tree huggers, and scientists. Okay, people weren't really making a business out of solar yet. They had just started to, and most of it was what's called off-grid. So camping, remote islands, RVs, sailboats, portable uses. This is what I actually went into, because the government wasn't supporting solar connected to the grid, and solar wasn't that efficient back then. You know, you were celebrating an 8% efficiency. Mm-hmm. Now we're at 24%. Efficiency. So the efficiencies have tripled, so the power per square inch produced has tripled, and the costs have come way down. So now actually solar is cheaper than coal, even without taking into account the detrimental factor of coal to the environment. So let's say there's no carbon tax, it's now today cheaper than coal. So that's why you see coal mines closing and solar factories popping up. But back then, it was very few and far between.
How hard was it setting up a manufacturing plant for panels?
So it was interesting because in 1988, I didn't actually set up the plant then. I just started buying stuff and learning the market. And then by the early 90s, we were designing our own stuff. And then my father had a factory in Montreal, which is the one I left in 1988 to start my company. And he decided that he was done with, you know, he'd done his career, he wanted to retire. He didn't know what to do with the land. I said, let me buy it. So I gave him shares in the company, and he gave me that piece of land. Okay. And on that same factory piece of land, I built the first solar panel factory in the history of Quebec in 2000.
That's fascinating. And what was the journey that led you to starting Solar Canopies today?
Yes.
At what point did you sell your shares, or did you sell the company that's first started? And what's the status of that company today?
So ICP Solar was that company. We built the factory in 2000. Then in 2003, we bought another factory in the UK, in Wales. But by then, the Chinese had started slowly to really invade. And by 2005, they had completely invaded the market with really cheap cost product. Mm-hmm. So we took a decision, actually, that was very difficult. We closed the Montreal factory. And then in 2007, we took the company public.
Okay.
And we had the factory in the UK. What we were trying to do is refurbish the UK factory. But again, the market was getting tougher and tougher. So in 2007, we said, we're not going to manufacture in Wales or in Canada. We're going to design, we're going to engineer, we're going to own the intellectual property, but we're going to have it made for us.
Okay.
So we decided to own intellectual assets rather than capital assets.
Okay.
Then in 2009, I was going through a life change, and General Motors approached me and said, we have this idea for solar canopies for our car dealers. Okay. Now, in my previous life, working with my dad, we sold to car dealerships and car stores. And so they said, you have both the automotive experience and the solar experience. Join us. We're gonna finance a company. We're going to headquarter in Michigan near our factories. And you're going to be a co-founder, and you're going to participate in creating the solar canopy. And I thought it was a great idea. So I joined them in 2010. I handed over my old company to a new CEO. And what happened was, in the old company, the new CEO got involved in a dispute with the investors. So they ended up closing about a year later. I was a year and a half into my mandate with General Motors. We had designed the canopy, we had executed a few. And then, as happens with big companies, they decided to make a shift. And they were using this company that we co-founded as a, I call it eye candy of sustainability. We're green, you know, look at us go into solar. What they decided to do was go and buy carbon credits instead and carbon offsets. Okay. So they closed that company in the fall of 2011. And I started this company exactly at that time.
Okay.
I said to them I was going to do it. They said, we're fine with it because we're shutting it anyways. Okay. So I started this group of companies in 2011. Mm-hmm. And we established our U.S. company in 2018 with an office in Burlington, Vermont. And now we just established an office in New York.
Okay. I have so many questions about the whole setting up, how you're able to take that, and especially about the intellectual property. But before we go into that, let's go back to the point where you mentioned China taking over the market.
Yes.
And that's something I'm really interested in, because one stat I did find is that by Scientific America is that between 2008 and 2013, the price of solar globally dropped by 80% because of China. China started pumping out solar with the goal of saturating the market and taking ownerships. How did that affect the North American market, your market, the UK market, all those markets that had this level, that had this price set up that you couldn't really play because manufacturing is expensive in Europe, North America? So how did it disrupt the market?
It meant if you didn't have a distinction, a quality distinction, a design distinction, a technology distinction, you're in a commodity market. And the minute you're in I call it the barrel of oil market. Like, you're trying to compete on the same basis, you know, cost per barrel, cost per watt. So I think for a lot of companies, it became service. What can you do to add service to your model that you can't do from China or India, that you have to do locally? And that's been the basis of how we evolved as a company. We started just doing solar structures, canopies. And then we learned that that was a commodity business.
Was it?
Yes. So it's just the cost of steel or cost of aluminum, you know, extruding it, making the parts. That's a commodity business. And we decided we want to be more than that. That's why in 2017, we embarked on what I call the iSun OS project. We had the iSun brand. And so we said, instead of just selling a canopy, even if we're putting hardware together, what if we sold a system that was flexible, modular, and scalable?
What's the system?
So it's based on a canopy, but it includes electric vehicle charging. It includes grid services with batteries. So you can, if you need a backup for your building, or if you need a backup for your electric vehicle charging, it includes smart air quality sensors. So we can not only tell the air quality at site, which is more and more required, but what is the effect you're having on the air quality through your system? Okay. So it's really about the data, providing our clients with data that they can use, whether it's for their sustainability metrics, right? Or their energy cost of energy metrics, or their resiliency metrics. So uptime, if you're providing uptime to a building, right now you're using generators, why? Why not have a solar recharged battery system that can feed your building for a period of time when the grid is down? Or take you completely off grid? So we put this system together, and through our software, you can now manage all of those components. So it becomes an energy hub. And we believe you can't have clean mobility without clean energy. It's like, imagine recharging an electric vehicle using coal sourced energy. It doesn't make sense. So we're bringing it all together in a system.
Okay.
And that's what distinguishes iSun at the end from other solar canopy or solar energy companies, is we've created our own proprietary system that manages all of these components and is modular. So if you want to bring in a smart camera, you know, one of the interesting things about electric vehicle charging in public spaces, women hate it.
Why?
Okay. A man's world is different from a woman's in this way. And I'll do a visual. A man's city is this big, but a woman's city is this big.
Okay.
For safety. So what do? We brought in security cameras to our charging stations and lighting. So 24/7 they're lit, 24/7 there's a video camera, right? So it makes public charging safer.
Okay, so for context, I'd like to understand a bit more about your exact product, and especially for the people that are listening. So basically, who's your typical customer for a solar canopy? Is it commercial or is it business? If I am someone who has an electric car and I own a garage, could you install the canopy on top of my garage, or is it more something that you install on parkings?
So we look at rooftop as a very separate kind of business. We'll do it if we're doing a canopy for a client, but we won't do it just as a business. Our forte and our specialization is in canopies. And why we did that? We looked at the marketplace and some realities. When you're putting a solar farm down, you're covering green space. You're reducing green space. You're actually reducing plant life like these trees, right? So there's a kind of dichotomy there. When you're putting solar on a roof, you have to figure out if the engineering of the roof can accommodate the solar panels. But there's 800 million open parking spots in North America alone, and they're already developed. And as you know, when you're walking on an asphalt park, it's a lot hotter because there's a heat effect called islanding. So our canopies are going to cover the parking lot, cool it down, and use that space to shade the car, protect it from snow and rain, and provide energy. So we said, why not take this asset that exists and develop over it very simply, rather than the complicated rooftop or the degreening, if you want to call it, of Greenland, right?
To go back to the part with GM, so how were you able, so you and GM worked on this project together, you developed the team, you developed the product, you had engineers from both sides collaborate.
Yes.
So when you both parted ways, who owned the patent, let's say, for the technology?
There wasn't a patent, there was a design. And I said to them, I'm not copying your design.
Okay.
And that was enough. It was a gentleman's agreement that I wasn't going to copy the design. And I didn't, actually.
Okay.
I didn't. I didn't like the end result design. I found it overkill. And so I came up with something that was leaner, more sustainable, because it's only made from aluminum. And I think more aesthetic as well.
About the materials. Whenever I post something about solar energy on social media, on Worldwide Engineering, I always get those comments in the comment section of people saying solar energy is really bad. Why are you promoting solar energy? The life cycle impact of solar energy is actually much higher than other sources of energy. What do you do with the... We have no way of recycling the batteries. We have no way of recycling the silicon panels. We have no way of doing XYZ. So what do you answer people like this?
97% of the materials used in a solar panel are recyclable.
Okay.
So it's a crock. Usually you're getting people who are paid for by the oil lobby, okay, or just don't know better. And that's okay. And you mentioned the word battery. So here's a perfect example. In a mobile application like an electric vehicle, a battery has to be super efficient and has to have the maximum part of its original capacity. Otherwise, the car becomes less and less efficient. After about 8 to 10 years, you take that battery out and you give it a stationary application connected to the grid. Now we're in the second life, right? When it's no longer efficient enough for the grid, you take it out again and you put it in an off-grid situation. So the reality is that there's not just a first life for this material, but a second life and even a third life.
Can you give me an example of third life?
Sure. Africa, remote villages, power source. So the solar panel charges the battery provides water pumping, ventilation, lighting to a smaller village, right? Now, it could be the third part of that leg. So this battery has now lasted at least 20 to 30 years with minimal loss of use in the materials. So we maximize the recyclability of materials that we use in the iSun systems. And we're very conscious of, for example, minimizing cobalt, which we know there's stories of how cobalt is mined in Africa, which is where a lot of it is, where there's child labor sometimes used, and I deplore that. So the partners that we have minimize the cobalt component of the batteries. And so again, it's a recyclable component. Show me a part of fossil fuels that's recyclable. Petrochemicals that are recyclable, right? So at the end of the day, nothing is perfect, but we strive to get as close to it as possible.
That's interesting. You've seen, so you've seen since 1988, you've seen solar go from 8% efficiency to 24% average today. When do you see that, you know, climbing? What are the different, you know, players that are pushing the industry forward? You know, whenever you were mentioning battery capacity, the first thing that came to mind is actually Tesla developing supercharging stations. You know, they're innovating in the battery space. So how do you see those different players pushing the industry forward? And when do you project, you know, solar really becoming this powerful source that that you can't deny, the, like, because 24% efficiency, like, what's up with the other 76%?
Right. So there's many reasons why we don't have 100% efficient conversion of a photon into an electron, right? It could be the frequency of light, the availability of light, the conversion effectiveness of the cell itself into energy, into electrons. And what you have to do is try to overcome all of those. It's not been exponential. It's been a slow growth. But every percent counts. And so whether it's a more efficient solar cell, a more transparent glass, all of these things combine to give you an efficiency. And when I say efficient solar cell, not just the conversion of the current spectrum of light, but adding spectrums of light that have not been used. Optical effects with glass. If you can capture more light, more reflective light that's angular, you capture more power. So it's not just, is my glass clearer? Is it more UV resistant? But when that sun is rising or that sun is falling, am I able to more efficiently capture that light as well?
What's the solution to that?
It's multiple. It's working on each of those things continuously and continuously improving it. So Kaizen.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, that's interesting. So what are some of the tips you'd give someone starting in the energy industry, someone who wants to start, someone who's passionate? You know, I studied building engineering at Concordia University, and one thing that got me, the thing that got me into Concordia University is my passion about renewable energy, and more specifically about green buildings. My aim was to go through building engineering and develop the buildings of the future, buildings that are self-sufficient, net zero buildings. It led me to get my LEED certificate, to go all through all those steps. So yeah, I wanted to ask you, how would you recommend someone to get started? Let's say I was graduating from university. What are the first steps you'd recommend me? Is it develop a product? Is it find investors?
No, I do an internship. So we just hired two Concordia graduates just recently. We're looking for more, particularly anyone who has SolidWorks capacity. You picked a good school for what you're doing, because I know Dr. Athanidis there, who leads the solar. I know Prag Pillay as well. I graduated from Concordia. I knew when they were doing the solar wall of that building and the solar research center that's in the basement, where you can actually test solar panels, and environmental chamber. So I think of the schools in Montreal, you picked a great one. I wouldn't recommend you dive into entrepreneurship unless you have this amazing idea that you know has not been executed, right? I would go learn. Start by an internship with a company, get a full-time position, right? And try to find a company where it's not just a singular focus, right? So if you go to a solar installer, it's just about installing. If you go to a solar panel developer, it's just about that. If you go to an integrator, you're going to learn about the different aspects that relate to what the end result is. And I think those are the steps I'd recommend to students graduating or still within school looking for a summer internship, is continue your learning before you dive in and put in your money into something. Like, don't be afraid to learn a little bit more beyond the school. School is your first step of learning, but it's not your last.
You know what they say, after school, that's when the real exam starts.
I hear you.
You know, that's where you really get tested.
100%. And I think something I read in your profile about failure, the true failure is not getting up after you fell. Anybody who thinks they're going to go from success to success is in la-la land and is dreaming. The reality is you're going to have failures. It is how you take them. It is how you use that to jump to the next level that's going to count in life, but particularly in business. Because there is no such thing as a one-way trajectory in business. You're going to have a jagged edge of a trajectory. And, I mean, the night is darkest before the dawn. So sometimes in your darkest moment, that's when you don't quit. That's when you keep on. You might shift. You might stop what you're doing in that moment because it's just not working. But you don't quit if you have a dream. I think that's what I would recommend to people the most. Follow your dream.
That's a great feedback. So my last question, and something that, you know, I'd love your opinion on that, is if you were to start again from when you were 28, starting with solar, would you still go knowing where the world of energy is right now? Would you still go into solar, or would you maybe right now consider something like wind or maybe nuclear or some other types of energy?
You're kind of asking me to do a woulda, coulda, shoulda, right?
Okay.
I personally don't believe in doing that.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. I don't know what my next step is when I walk out of this building.
Yeah, but
and I'm so to think of it this way, right? I love what I do. I wake up every single morning working at my hobby, doing good things for people, and having put four kids through great private schools and given them a great life.
I don't deny you.
You see what I'm saying? So whether it could have been go to nuclear or go to hydro, there is new nuclear being developed today, which is smaller and more renewable. Hydro actually today costs about four times more than solar. The latest solar costs are a quarter of hydro. So what's the future of hydro?
Okay.
Well, there are mini hydro. There are smaller hydros that are going to still be feasible, especially in islands, for example. So it's very hard to do that kind of thing. I mean, the industry is growing. We're adding more jobs in renewables than we're adding in fossil fuel. They're going down. We're picking that job bank up. Mm-hmm. To compare it to wind, it's a different kind of source. Mm-hmm. Distributed wind hasn't worked very well. Centralized wind has worked well. So you see wind farms,
right,
but you don't see a lot of wind towers on a single property, right? It hasn't worked very well. Mm-hmm. So it really depends on what drives you. Again, what fascinates you, what captivates you, I'd go into that. And if it was nuclear, I'd go into that. If it was hydro, I'd go into that. If it was wind or biomass or geothermal, I'd go into that. Each has its pro, each has its con. It's really what drives you, what has touched you in such a way that you really feel you can get up in the morning and make it your hobby.
And a lot of times, just like we were talking about, you know, failure, a lot of times you need to try different things. You need to try, you need to jump between industries. You know, when I was first starting actually with the soul entrepreneurship vibe that, you know, I've been trying to research different things. You know, at some point I was thinking about developing this product that cleans solar panels. You know, I was like, you know, we live in Canada, solar panels are covered during winter. Why not develop, you know, like an automated windshield wiper? Because I was watching videos and you see people that manually go to remote locations and wipe them manually. And I was like, there's a better solution to that. And of course, things happened, which led me to different directions and which landed me here. And in 10 years, I'm not going to be the same place. But it's all the process, you know? And it's beautiful, if you ask me.
That idea you had, by the way, there's many ways to clean a solar panel. There's the mechanical, and today there are robots that go across solar farms. There's manual, and there's also coatings.
What do you mean?
Coatings on the glass that make it slip.
Oh.
Dirt, snow, water, slip right off. So people are working on different things to address that issue that you identified in different ways.
Okay, so to... would, for example, about that coating thing, a lot of times the glass sticks to the panel. So I was thinking, one of my ideas, for example, it was putting resistances inside the panel to heat it up and to melt just enough ice, a thin layer of ice for it to slip.
Right.
How do they do it right now?
So right now they suffer with the snow on it, or they go clean it once a month. But there's a new technology of solar panel called bifacial, which means it creates power from the top and the bottom. And what happens is solar panels lose efficiency in heat. Bifacials create more heat because they create more power, which melts the snow faster. So now you have a natural effect because of the new realities of this bifacial panel, which is more efficient, the 24% I mentioned, that then will go and melt the snow. Not in the middle of January to February, but December and March, you're going to start seeing that snow melt naturally by itself.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
That's fascinating.
So my point, I guess, is there's many ways to address an issue. Mm-hmm. And you can't just think, for example, of mechanical cleaning mm-hmm. as the solution.
That's fascinating. Well, listen, Sass, this was a beautiful podcast. I'm still trying to get over the amount of value that was pumped in this and during this episode. You were mentioning to me before the episode that you know you're looking for new people to join the team. What are some of the announcements you might have? Where can people find you personally? Can find your company? How can they contribute in any way to your company, to your success?
Right.
How can they give back to the knowledge you know that you just shared with them?
They could look me up on LinkedIn or look up iSun Energy on LinkedIn and send a message. We just posted 2 jobs and closed them recently because we found candidates. We're still looking actually for an engineer who'd want experience in renders. So converting SolidWorks renders into real life type renders. That would be a position that's still open with us.
Okay. And you had mentioned to me that it's not necessarily you can work from anywhere.
Absolutely. What we care about today is the end result.
Of course.
If you get it done in an hour, good for you. If you get it done in 10, that's 10, mm-hmm. right? What I'm looking for is, did we set a timeline together? Did you get it done? That's what I care about.
Okay.
So Sass Perez on LinkedIn.
Sass Perez on LinkedIn and iSun Energy on LinkedIn. We're available on Instagram as well. And you can message us. So whatever you're comfortable with, just use that platform.
Sass, thank you so much for the interview.
Thanks for the time.
It was a pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
That was fantastic. That was really good.
I'm happy if it works out for everyone, you know?
Especially
if there's an engineer that wants to gain experience, we're happy to entertain them, you know, depending on their capacities. And then they turn into jobs. They're not just internships and that's it. They turn into opportunities. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of learning with us because we know all the aspects of the energy play. So you're not going to just learn about solar. You're going to learn about integration, wind load, snow load, engineering factors that affect carports differently from rooftop or farms. Electric vehicle mobility is a big part of what we're doing, right? Battery technology, as you brought up, is a big part of what we're doing. So it's a really neat way to learn about different things.